hello and welcome back to Tales from the Periphery, episode 15, with me, your host, Mike Whittaker. First off, I'd really like to apologise for how long this episode has taken to get out. It was recorded towards the end of September, and since then work has been piling on me, and I lost most of a week of spare editing time to an emergency dentist appointment, which, trust me, I would very much rather have done without. So, there's not been much preamble to this. There will be a little bit of postamble covering upcoming events, but for now, let's just get on with the show. I really ought to stop sounding so surprised by this, but I have a guest again. This time, we met at UK Games Expo, mostly because Rich Cook and Sam Hall came over to me and said, by the same token, I've got these cool things you've got to come and check out. Come find Ed, talk to Ed. And we eventually managed to get together on the Catalyst demo stall. So, Ed Cardella, by the same token, welcome aboard.
Hello. Hi, thank you for having me.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
doing considerably better. Obviously, you're here to promote some rather fabulous Alpha Strike tokens that you guys have been working on, which I'm looking at here and drooling over. But first, you are, as the saying goes, a first-time guest on the show, and possibly not the first, not the last. So we have a little tradition, which if you follow the show, you'll probably be familiar with. Of getting to know our guests. So we'll start with how did you get into gaming in general and Battletech in particular?
Proper gauntlet. Oh, it's a weird one. I have a brother who is 16 years older than me. So tabletop gaming has been something that's kind of been in my life almost forever. I think I played the Lord of the Rings strategy battle game first time when I was about six, and so I've kind of been doing that ever since. And I think because I kind of was doing it with somebody who was a lot more experienced than I was, I kind of got to skip that embryonic period where you're kind of in the Games Workshop lobby and got to kind of step out and discover everything else about tabletop gaming that exists, which was very, very cool. And more generally with Battletech, I think my first exposure to it was either the Xbox Mech Assault games.
Ooh.
Or it was the... I grew up around the time WizKids had the license. So it was the blind boxes, Mech Warrior blind boxes, basically. And I remember getting them from shout out to Aldershot Game Store, that's still there and still does a bunch of Battletech. getting their mech blind boxes, and if you got a unique character, they had these tiny little card like dossier files in them. And just the kind of hit of getting one of those and learning all these really granular details about any characters was always just kind of so awesome.
Did that get you into the lore as well?
Very. I kind of what you could consider a lore guy, I guess. And yeah, I think absolutely. At least the kind of the idea of the storytelling of that, like the fact that I think something like Battletech, because everybody to some degree they have their preference for mechs and they have all of their kind of favorite ones.
We'll get to that.
you want these unique kind of demarcations, and so something I always thought was really cool was the personalization and the kind of granular detail all of it has. You know, it's not just that this guy's piloting this mech. It's like this is where they started. This is what they do. This is that one weird item they have in their cockpit. You know?
And there's obviously with the depth of the lore, there is certainly always the ability for you to go, I fancy putting a character in that niche, so I can tell this story.
Absolutely. I've always been a narrative gamer as well, and I think I've always been into it for the storytelling. And so I've very much been about kind of, well, what's the situation in this universe I can find and then put some people in and then something cool can happen.
And I think from a gaming point of view, I always like to know why I have toys on the table.
Mm, absolutely.
So, and you've from there, you somehow ended up making tokens for a living, or designing tokens.
Yeah, that's a weird story. So my degree was in model making. Right. And so that's kind of much more on the kind of traditional side, where you really had two or three avenues, and it was either going to be TV and film production or architectural model making. And they were kind of the viable things you could go to, or you could really find your niche. And for a very long time, I was like, I want to sculpt tiny guys. And I kind of fell out of love with that a little bit at a certain point. And after my degree, initially, I went off and did about a year of freelance work doing theater puppetry making.
Right.
So I was both designing puppets with a team and then doing essentially like a puppet first aid in a shack behind a stage for a while, which is both simultaneously, it's one of the best experiences I think I've had professionally, but so incredibly stressful when something's legs come off and you've got to kind of somehow reattach it in 90 seconds
before its next appearance.
Absolutely. Yeah And there was a walkie-talkie.
Could have done with you for one of my school plays. we did Bartholomew Fair, which, if you remember, has a very scurrilous puppet show in the middle of it.
Oh, very nice.
I got to be one of the puppeteers.
That's sick. I you know what I always find, what I always admire about that kind of, about doing that, is I was making these things, and in my hands, they're just sort of just about doing the thing they need to be doing, and then somebody picks it up and it's just like, oh, it's alive now. Like,
yeah.
But I did that, and as it was kind of coming to an end, I got a very weird email out of the blue from an old lecturer who kind of recalled, oh, you were into all of this kind of weird tabletop gaming nonsense. And they, Arts University Bournemouth, they maintain quite a good network of various kind of employers and just people in those creative spaces. So it turned out that by the same token, had reached out looking for, at the time, just a kind of production assistant. And I sort of just gave it a go and went over there. And at the time, it was very, very small. So I believe you've met Chris.
Yes,
as well.
I think he came over with you, didn't he? To the demo.
And he is also a model maker in architectural. We went over by the same token, and he started the whole thing with his lovely wife Samta, and then it's kind of just grown out from there. And I joined, and there was about four of us, and I've been there for about 4 years now, and team is about 8-9 people.
Cool.
And it's just been kind of going, and it's been really cool to be there from so early and get to kind of see these games happen and kind of see the community for them grow and do something for them and see that kind of feedback on itself. Yeah.
Right, so before we actually move on to these rather cool pieces of laser etched acrylic here, we've got to do the quick fire round.
Yes.
So, classic Battletech or Alpha Strike?
Alpha Strike.
Definitely. I could have guessed that. from the speed with which you zoomed over for an Aces demo.
I'm so excited for that game mode. You can get to that later, but oh, man. Yes. Alpha Strike. I've played Classic. It seems really, really cool. And to be fair, I can see all the tiny moving pieces of it and why it would totally appeal to you. But the thing about Alpha Strike is I've been able to take a couple lances worth of stuff around and just get people playing it. And that's been really fun. And it's so basic in terms of how it initially plays.
Yeah.
But you can... That kind of scale of rules that Battletech seems to have, where it's kind of, you can, here is everything, we're not really going to tell you what to use and what not to use, we're just going to kind of let you go as deep as you want, has been really, really cool.
Yes, I think that and the fact that you can start with a fair, I mean, if you've played from the box set, the introductory rules are actually pretty much full-on battle tech for the tech level in the box. And from then on in, you start going, I quite fancy playing in the Jihad era, so I've got mixed with stealth, better look up stealth, etc., etc.
I think the second game we played, we sort of, it's a bit embarrassing to say now, but we sort of, partway through the second game, I'd built these lists, and we kind of discovered some of the special rules partway through, because at that point we were only playing out of the Alpha Strike box. And it's sort of like realizing, oh no, this atlas is like a sniper stealth atlas. Okay, all right, we'll go from there. And since getting a better understanding, it's been really cool to realize kind of what these things are and what their niches belong in.
Yeah, but I think it's one of the nice features of Alpha Strike is you can decide where you want to sit on that level of technical complexity. If you're just happy with the basic rules, you can sit there and play Lake Succession War clan invasion and nothing's going to come and explode your brain. If you really want to explore all the fun things that NC Kestrel and others have put in the rules, then you go full ill clan and you know, you've got the Jade Falcon mechs with the partial wings and God knows what else. Right, toys on the table, yes or no? Painted, yes or no?
I'm not a purist about this, but I am definitely a painter, and I think because I have to spend a lot of time and headspace in multiple games, but for work really, a lot of my game experience weirdly is the anticipation of getting in the game by painting it, and so I think it's quite important to me actually in terms of putting together the story as well. If I've put the colours on these guys, I know exactly what they're about. I've had time to think about their unit markings, why they're like this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for me, painted, but by no means is that addictive.
I would say, are you sod it passes the 2-foot test guy, or I'm going to sit here and paint one mech for an evening?
I'm a bit like do or die with painting, and I will kind of, I can't really do half measures, which I think for Battlestar Tech is terrible because it lends itself so well to that, but I do like 3 layers of highlights on all my panels
and a permanent bookmark for camospecs.com.
yeah it takes me about I've been doing them by the lance, so I think the last bunch took me about 6 weeks on and off, just evenings. And it's very nice. It's lovely to have that to come back to, but oh my word.
We at some point will run a painting episode, I think. And one of the things I want to discuss is different people's approach to painting, because I'm very much a slap chop plus contrast paints plus paint pens is my current way of painting a mech. And I can pretty much do a company in a long evening.
Nice.
And they look all right. I mean, they're not brilliant, but they pass the 2-foot test, and they look better than not painted at all.
So. Absolutely. That's the thing, is it's like the margin between unpainted and painted is so wide, yet the actual amount of effort to get there is actually quite little.
Yeah.
And it adds so much.
Yes, I will at some point get Dan from our club on the show, who's had a bit of an epiphany recently. He's a non-painter because he suffers a bit from, well, he's a painter. He just suffers from decision paralysis and other things. Mm-hmm. And we've basically introduced him to, look, spray paint it black, dry brush it grey, highlight it white, slap some contrast paint on it, and look, you have a mech that you can now deal with these here paint pens. And he's going, where's this been all my life?
Yeah, you can't second guess yourself if it takes you 5 minutes to paint it.
No. But if you're as sad as I am with a large number of unpainted bits of grey plastic as I have, then you just go, I can't decide. I'll paint another lot in a different paint scheme.
Yeah, there we go.
All right. So, favourite era.
I'm guilty here because I think it's just like it's probably late Succession Wars, mostly because that's what I know. We obviously, that's where a lot of the initial less so the Alpha Strike box, but the Game of Armored Combat box, which we also had, kind of kicks you off. And I think it's just in terms of balancing and our game experiences, we've been a bit loath to kind of go any further than that. But I am like about to paint a bunch of clan stuff, and ooh, I'm excited for that. And I'm excited for the ones that seem to just be able to absolutely obliterate.
Yes, which you will discover have a ridiculously high PV and can sometimes be a bit of a glass cannon.
This thing has 4 heat scale, what?
Yes, there are a few like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Favourite faction, then?
I think, like, I've painted my personal unit as First St. Ives Lancers. And
different.
I think it's because they're such a... I have a weird kind of affinity for the Capellan Confederation because it's one of those factions that sort of got written initially as these kind of moustache twirling villains, and they've just become
somewhere between moustache twirling villains and punchbag.
Yeah. And as time's gone on, they've gotten just that bit more nuanced and interesting. And I think especially St. Ives is so kind of fraught, like they're like, knowing what happens to it, and it secedes and everybody defects. The dynamics, I think, are really interesting. Like, especially in 3025, I think they got destroyed almost 3 times.
Mm-hmm. How caught up are you in the lore?
I am. So I'm one of those people that came in through the content kind of creator pipeline, I'd say. So I know a lot of the broad strokes, and I know kind of I know more about what happens to the specific things I've gone and looked up, but I'm very guilty of not reading any novels.
Right. So I was about to say, you are actually going to love some of the recent happenings in the Capellan Confederation in the Ilclan era.
I know they're on the upswing. They're doing pretty well.
Because it's the Capellan Confederation, the usual side order of backstabbing, infighting, and for the greater good of the Confederation.
Excellent.
Going on.
Excellent. Gotta love it.
Just how you'd like it for a bunch of for what they are. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. Favorite unit then, I guess, is going to be First St. Ives Lancers.
Probably. Yeah. Probably. With a weird shout out. Just a weird shout out because they caught my eye at one point with Snords Regulars, just because I was like, oh, hang on, these guys are art thieves. What's going on?
Oh, they're brilliant. If you, you probably met Richard Cook at the at the show. Tall, very tall, large guy. He has been doing the lore of Snords Irregulars to the extent, as far as he knows, he has every mech that's ever been described in any book.
Wow.
And it's well over a company in some really outlandish pain schemes. It's absolutely brilliant.
Nice.
Okay, favourite mech?
Favourite mech. Oh, man. I had to look this up because I knew I wasn't going to pronounce it correctly. But back when it was the WizKids minis, my brother opened this and I never did. And I was so sad about it. But it was the Rokuro Kubi.
Right, okay, that's obscure.
I think it was it's just this hunched thing and it's like, hold on, it's got a big katana, what? I think not being like 8 now, it's probably a bit more basic, and I think it's either the Thunderbolt, simply because it's basically a tank on legs, or the Phoenix Hawk, because personally in any of my games I've played, everybody seems to ignore it. It seems to fly around doing like anime protagonist stuff and then just kind of run off.
Yeah. And it's much better if you can find one of the variants that isn't jump weak as well.
Yes.
Because some of the late Succession War variants are actually a little bit better than the classic one is. It's very classic, and it's one of the first battle mechs that you get to see. Mm. But dear oh Lord, it's not it's too heavy for the amount of stuff it shouldn't be that heavy and be that wimpy.
Yeah.
You feel.
Yeah. It's for the vibe more than anything, but think it's one of those things, it just gets part of the reason it gets ignored, because it's sort of just there.
I mean, it's like a friend of mine's pet peeve is the Marauder because it's so bigged up in lore.
Mm.
You know, it's the ultimate mustache twirling Kuritan villain, Mac. And it's billed as being menacing and scary, and you, there are Innosphere mechs that will basically just punch its lights out and won't go.
Yeah, I have one of them right next to me, and I can't wait to see it like underperform.
There's an unwritten law that the first time you commit a painted mech, it loses.
Oh my god, I think I have a very vivid memory of being about 9. And playing like maybe my second game of 40K and getting the Vindicator I'd just gotten for Christmas out for the first time. It immediately like got crit and like rolled a 6 on the explosion table and just died.
Yeah, it happens. It still happens to me.
Formative.
Yeah, so I guess favorite novel is going to be Don't Read the Novels.
Right. I do have a kind of both structurally unorthodox because it's an audiobook and doctrinally unorthodox because it's not Battletech one, but I think spiritually it's worth a shout out, if that's okay.
Yes.
And that's Brigador by, I had it written down, Brigador by Bradley Buckmaster, and it's based off of a isometric shooter PC game, but right. It really, really just kind of espouses what I think very realistic seeming mech warfare would be. And I think for somebody that's so detail oriented, it's like this guy has gone on a 3-paragraph digression about how these guys use their map boards to navigate and like plot patrol routes. Cool. You know, if you're into that, I definitely recommend it. I think it's
I have Googled it. I shall go back to it later and grab a copy from somewhere. I'm sure there's somewhere will happily sell me it. However, I suspect the next question you do have an answer to, which is favorite of the video games.
Ooh, I think it's probably Mech Assault, because those were the games I really started with, and I think also in that period of time I've never played it, but I have a little bit of a soft spot for Mech Warrior 2 because I remember watching like compilations of the FMV intros, like when I was very small, and just being like, what? This is awesome. And I still remember quite vividly, like, I think it's like, get out of the hangar or something. Yeah.
Final one then. Kickstarter, did you?
We did not. And I regret it. I regret it regularly because we were just getting back into Battle. I say it's funny because I was into this stuff when I was much younger, but we came back to Battletech kind of about when I saw Mercenary in the run up to Mercenaries crowdfunding. And at the time it was like, well, we could back this but like it's not going to turn up for a while, or we could just buy everything else now.
So you
went
the latter approach.
Yeah, but I still haven't found a box of Mercenaries. And actually, I remember last time I saw you, you mentioned Fortress needs, I think. I need
Fortress
in
the States, Sci-Fi Trader in Germany, who have now sorted out their US, their UK postage issues, because I just placed an order with them today. Oops. Hobby Games of Finchley.
Yes.
Leisure Games of Finchley, sorry. We are fond of all these people on the podcast because they seem to have access to distributors who actually send them stuff at prices that don't make everybody choke.
Nice. I need to check out Finchley again.
I can strongly recommend all three of those. Which brings us to the reason you're here. Now
yes.
I have here a lot of lovely little Ziploc bags. See, sound effects on radio. Contains some utterly, utterly gorgeous Alpha Strike tokens, which I spent my train journey down to London on Tuesday peeling all the backing off.
Hey.
Much to the bemusement of the people sat around me on the train who wouldn't wonder if I was doing. So tell us about these. What prompted this then?
It's honestly, I'd like to say this about everything we make, that I think it's really something we want first. And then it's a case of making it good enough that other people will want it second. And So we've done a set of kind of acrylic tokens for Battletech and for Alpha Strike specifically. And yeah, I tried to kind of just get the things, the reminders I think I would want, really. And it's funny when designing for wargaming, because a real bugbear of mine is that stuff just isn't always that visible from across the table. So trying to do things in a way where it like is really screaming at you.
Yeah.
This thing's charged. It's definitely charged.
Yeah, with the obvious compromise that you don't want to spend your time moving 53 million counters around with a Mac in for which, yeah. So, just pulling open that first Ziploc bag, this has the jump and sprint and DFA and ground and charge, because I think two of them may have leaked into the wrong bag. And they're all, the thing I particularly noticed about them, I do like the fact that you've just got a little partial hexagon notch in the back that I assume is designed to line up with the back of the base.
Yeah.
Reaching for the random mech that's sitting on his desk. And indeed, they do very nicely.
Yeah. This is another thing. I also want to, when I'm doing this, try and kind of cram functionality in as much as I can. So, especially, it's another thing with wargaming, you've got a lot of minis running around potentially. And so, placing something next to something is good enough until you have a weird mosh pit of Highlanders all trying to kick each other in the head. And then you're like, wait, which one's doing the kicking and which one's getting kicked? The idea that everything can kind of nest into itself or at least point to itself. That's another thing I try and do a lot is kind of graphics that are inherently going to suggest that this is for this thing over here.
Now, I'm now pulling out of here one of the critical tokens, which are a weird chain. I'll make sure there's some photos and a link on the show notes. But they're designed to sort of tuck against the back corner of.
Yeah, they can kind of tuck against another kind of. I think you can get roughly about three tokens around a mech if you're really going hard. but the crits also are designed to nest into each other, so you can kind of stack them atop each other. And it does get a bit crazy.
But then at the point where you've taken two fire control hits, three weapon hits, and a movement critical, you're in trouble anyway. So
yeah. But the hope is that you have them. I mean, people can use them how they prefer to, but they have a kind of, to describe them, they have a iconographic side. So each side of the token says, this is the crit, whether it's fire control or movement or weapon. And it has an icon, and then the flip side has a summation of the rules effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the idea, how I use them at least, is when the crit is applied, you have the icon side, and then at the end of the turn, when it is actually in effect, it flips.
Oh, that's nice. I hadn't thought of that. Because there's always that problem with did I get that this turn or last turn? So yeah, absolutely. Essentially we have, and I'm not going to tip all these out and produce massive sound effect, but we've got the obvious set of jump, sprint, charge, death from above, immobilized, stationary. I think I've got just about everything there, haven't I?
I think so.
They're all designed that one of those fits against the rear hex of the mech.
Yeah.
And they're very nice. Then we have all the critical markers in various. So we've got everything here for weapon crits, fire control crits, and the other bag's got engine criticals. What else have we got in here? Well, all the obvious ones, movement crits, and so on and so forth. So, and they're all this slightly odd shape, which you'll see on the show notes, which is designed to interlock. So when you're sitting there being pounded by something that's hit you to about five different crits, they take up about as minimum battle space as table space as is reasonable.
Hmm. And while you're getting kind of like horribly shot, you can spend a nice little time arranging them.
Yeah, keeps you on mischief, doesn't it? And then we have, in this little bag here, we have a lovely rear fire arc marker, which I found myself wanting so many times.
I think that was actually the one that started it off.
Because it also has a couple of ears that mean it sort of sits, it hooks round the standard size base. And then you've got a very nice little rear arc that's much easier to visualise than other means.
So when we play, we use... Chris was a massive X-Wing player.
Right.
So we use one of those kind of vertical laser pointers. I'm trying to think what you'd actually call it. The one that projects a line on
the wall. I know the one you mean. Army painter do them, don't they?
And so we use that in conjunction with the rear arc, and then that hopefully makes it a lot easier. And then you get to make a lot of noises as well.
And then we've also got a little pair set of double-sided tokens that say moved on one side and fired on the other, which is nuts.
Yeah, sorry. So these are a bit of a sneak peek because we have not released these yet.
Ah, sorry.
No, you're totally fine. This is, funnily enough,
thank you even more so.
No worries. So this is actually something I made the last time we played as quickly as I possibly could. Because again, this is something I'd like to say. I think this is a bit of an example of our ethos with things like this, is that we like to take a lot of feedback and run with it, and also just kind of see how it goes after a few games. And this is something that I was running a three player scenario between me and Chris and a friend of ours, and in that scenario we are running, I built a force that was I think roughly 8 to 10 mechs per side. And so
it's very easy to lose track at that point, isn't it?
I was in real time discovering quite how complicated it can get, and kind of knocked those out very quickly. I was like, hang on, these are going to be really useful. And they were.
They are. They're very slightly too small for the hexes, though. I think they might need a recut.
Well, thankfully, we are in the prototyping stage with those.
Indeed, so, but that's the whole point of these things, isn't it?
Indeed.
But I must admit, we have an occasional tendency to run all day stupidly big Alpha Strike games, and you do find yourself going, "Have I moved that? Have I moved it? Did I fire it?" And
yeah,
sometimes you don't want to do the fire from the left side to the table to the right side of the table and just do things in order. You want to fire things in a specific order, and those are quite handy. The other thing that is really cool, I have to say, I really, really like here, but we've got the whopping big heat tokens, which are always handy, because particularly if you're playing those stupid clan mechs with 4 overheat. But I really like the cover tokens.
Yes, yeah, they were really fun. They were actually sampling them and getting them out. The line of sight markers, just putting them in front looks very cool. They were very inspired by the, I think it was the crosshair from MechWarrior 5.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to check myself on that one.
Essentially, these are, and I'll try and describe them. And obviously, there'll be a picture. They're a two part token. There's a base which is designed very much to fit on the front of a mech. He says, and of course, I've now picked the one mech with the least well defined front of any, because Catalyst put it on.
What was that?
Stupid angle. And there's basically a mech high for most sensible values of mech optional, probably including the Atlas. Coloured clear acrylic screen with a crosshair sight on it, and it's then divided into 3x3 by dotted lines. So I'm guessing the aim is if there is mech in 2/3 of these, then that you can see it's not got partial cover, etc., etc. But they are really pretty, and there's actually 4 of them in the set. There is one for vehicles and infantry, there is one for mechs, there is one for proto mechs, which I have never dabbled in, and there is one for those of you who are mad enough to field an Ares.
Yeah,
all different colours. They're really rather nice, those. I like those.
They're very fun. They were pretty much lifted from the optional rules in the Alpha Strike Commander's book.
Yep.
But yeah, they just seemed, they honestly, they just seem like such an obvious thing to try.
Have you tried them in anger?
We tried them kind of. I think if you go on the website, there's a picture of a Wolverine behind a Hextech building with one of them on, and I think that might have been a legit moment.
Yes, well, this is all getting a playtest on Monday. We've oh, awesome. A bunch of folks playing Alpha Strike down at club, so I'm bringing these for my token set, I think. For full disclosure, thank you very much, Ed, for sending me these. I didn't pay for them, but I will be paying for some more.
Thank you. Don't worry.
I believe at least two of my club mates have said, just point him at my wallet, please.
Excellent.
I really like these. They're very distinctive. They're physically larger than the tokens in the Alpha Strike box, and they are also physically larger than those of us who just use 7mm micro dice. But they have a certain, I'm not going to say weight's the wrong word. They have a certain authority to them in some ways. A
kind of visual oomph, I'd say. Yeah. I think, funnily enough, if you look at our other ranges for the other sorts of games we do, they're actually a bit smaller usually.
I have your Arkham Horror range.
Oh, amazing! Well,
we have a club game that runs every month, and we're slowly working our way through saving the world, Bob, from tentacle horrors one card at a time, as the saying goes. I keep buying more because they keep giving me the character with the guns and 3 tons of ammo. I'm feeling I'm being typecast.
I've done that to myself. I ended up playing Mystic for my first ever game, and I don't think I've ever not played Mystic.
But those are lovely little tokens. In fact, I could spend an awful lot of money at your store.
Thank you. Well, we'll try to be back at UKG next year.
So what have you got lined up going forward for this range, if anything? I know we were bouncing a few ideas around.
Yeah, for BattleTech, I think, obviously, we talked about the moved and fired tokens already. As part of that game, it involved it was a modification of the capture the flag scenario in the Commander's Handbook. And one of the things I also did was some nice... I believe it's 2-inch diameter. If it isn't, it is the correct denomination from the rulebook. Objective tokens.
Right. Nice.
And then I also, I'd really like to add a destroyed token, because again, another thing about this is, you know, especially in those larger games, keeping track of, is this thing actually dead? Do I need to spare any more fire on that?
Yes, it's lying down. The problem with that is now taking up twice as much space as everything else on the battlefield.
Yeah, I get very scared of lying down my minis, I have to say.
I'm less precious about my paint jobs, I suspect.
But so I'd like to do some destroyed ones. Chris and I go back and forth a lot about little smoke plumes that you can somehow attach or something. And I think that would be very fun.
I wonder if you could do something that's basically a set of flames that the base will stand in.
That'd be very cool. Another little nest thing. Oh, okay. Right, I'm marked in.
scribble.
And then the other thing was kind of general TMM markers. So something that I think would just be a bit more helpful. I mean, one of the bits of feedback we've gotten is that people are kind of happy enough with their own movement systems, but just in general, this is actually the TMM of this. So I don't have to constantly ask my opponent, what's that doing? You know, I can just do
it. Or even, what's its TMM?
Yeah. I think would be really helpful. And so I'd really like to get those out. They're on my list. For hopefully very soon. But yeah, I think that's most of it. Oh, there's also, I actually have these like half drawn, but Narc and Narc and Tag are like necessary. I'm aware.
Yes,
I'll get there.
I'm a huge fan of the Stalker 5M.
Which, yes, which is nice.
Basically, long range missiles and knock up the wazoo.
Nice. I have a Raven. I have a Raven and a couple LRM carriers. And I've been quite desperate to just kind of run that around, just kind of going, he's over there.
Yeah. I found myself actually printing a 3D, laser cutting a whole load of NARC tokens just out of MDF, because the for regular listeners will remember that Rich and Sam down in Enfield ran a big Battle of Luthien game, and I took a Kurita C3 company, which is really hard to do in Clan Invasion area. I think I had one of every mech that actually has C3, and then a lance of tanks with Nork. So the object of the exercise being wander up here in Nokia, and then everything pounds the living daylights out. and I wound up printing out loads of Nork tokens because I was sure I was going to need them. So yes, Nork and Tag are always useful. Mm.
That's another one, actually. C3.
Oh yeah. The little cardboard C3 ones that are actually, I found myself not using them, but I had a. Because it was a Kurita Lance, I'd got some of the 28mm Sashimono back banners Wargames Atlantic Ashigaru sprue that somebody didn't want. And I basically, all of the mechs had a back banner with a couple of Chinese characters on it, which were, okay, Chinese, not Japanese, excuse me, but they were actually the dragon and number from a Ma Yong set.
That's really cool.
So I had the white dragon, the blue, the red dragon, and the green dragon C3 lances, with one, two, three, four on each. Which I was kind of pleased with, but yes, I think in general some form of way of indicating those. I wonder whether there's any way of doing those as a some kind of base ring or something.
Because yeah,
they're going to stay with them. It's not like they're going to be something you're going to be adding temporarily. They're going to be staying with the Mac all the time. I don't know. You're the token designer. I just think aloud a lot.
Drawing board. But this is actually, I mean, this is something I almost want to add, and I don't know if this is okay to ask here, but we have a Discord, and we try to be very active with kind of people who are interested in us or. Kind of just want to give us feedback on product, and we're all very receptive being reached out to in regards to those sorts of things. Like, if anybody ever thinks they're like, oh, I really need this solution my game, I'll do it if I can.
And you have a Discord?
Yes.
I'll have the link out of that for you once we're done.
Awesome.
drop me in an email and I'll make sure it gets into the show notes, because I should be joining if nobody else does.
Me! I have to warn you, it's mostly Marvel Champions, people. We really need to swing the balance.
I'm sure I can manage that. Now, what I was going to ask you, we got to play Aces.
We did.
First question has to be, what did you think?
Awesome. Yeah, I really liked it. It seemed really dynamic. Like, and it was an interesting way to play it, because obviously there were four of us at the table, and it becomes less of a, you know, it's not a competitive thing at that point, but it's this puzzle solving exercise that I think is really cool. And I think wargaming actually has that potential to it. And I think in a lot of more mainstream aspects of it, you don't see it, but it kind of just becomes this really interesting, almost like, how do we solve this thing happening in front of us? And yeah, it was really fun. And it was also, I think my highlight is we failed to spot objective, I can't remember which letter it was, and then turn three, a bunch of clan mechs randomly appeared from under a building.
I can't imagine how that would happen. It says here on this scenario sheet. Yeah. I think the thing I particularly enjoyed about it from the viewpoint of, I mean, under normal circumstances, the way you'd play, of course, is I wouldn't have been there. The four of you would be playing the game logic to make the opponent do and sort of boy consensus as we were trying to do. I think we were saying, right, so the instructions say this, this, and this. I reckon that means it has to move there.
Yeah.
And I think I like that whole ethos of cooperative gameplay, I have to say.
I think it like, as somebody who has quite a few people who are sort of gaming or wargaming adjacent in my life, mostly because I have to put up with me. Like the having the option to sit down at a table and go, all right, here is an idea of the, in this case, BattleTech experience, and then go, not, and then not have to go, all right, I'm going to shoot at you now, is really nice, because
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's just also sussing out that, yeah, it's like, as you say, kind of that engine of consensus, sussing out that thing together feels a lot more participatory.
Absolutely. Yeah. Did that give you any ideas for more tokens?
What was it? Edge? The edge mechanic seems important.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's on a dinner notepad somewhere.
But it's a measure of how busy you've been that it's still in a notepad somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I think Aces is... I can't wait till November, basically.
Mm. We have a very, very long spreadsheet of that's our release schedule, and it kind of everything archived, I think, started a couple of years ago from back then, and kind of stretches out in perpetuity to the point where we kind of don't really know what's happening anymore. And Aces is there in November on that release date, and every time I see it, I'm like, I hope I can get hold of the box.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of hoping so too.
Yeah.
So just moving down to, I mean, as someone who owns a diode laser cutter, how do you do these? Are they basically just laser on acrylic?
Yeah. So that's a cool question, actually, because the process has changed since I've been there. So when I started, everything was designed through AutoCAD drawing software, which is a absolutely bizarre way, like, to do drawing, because it's point and click.
About the only thing it has going for it is the end result is a .dxf file.
Yeah. but very, very interesting way of drawing, but quite weirdly nice for me, because I am I'm dyspraxic, so my way of engaging with drawing is a little bit weird. There's a picture of me on our website drawing, and it looks like I don't know how to hold a pen. But yeah, so that was that initially, and as time's gone on, it's evolved a little bit. So if you've got any experience doing laser cutting yourself, one of the things we discovered was that the laser will read gradients between black and white. So a laser cutter usually looks at when you format your file out into a laserable file, everything that's black is etchable, everything that's white is not etchable. And then as you kind of create this gradient, realize you can draw something, and it creates shades.
Mm.
And it was kind of like magic. It was actually a friend of mine that discovered this and sort of started doing work with it. And from that point, we moved over a lot of our work to Krita, which is a open license, free to use bit of drawing software. That's fantastic. I would recommend it to anybody that's interested in that sort of thing and not using it already.
Can you drop me a link in email after the show? Yes, and I'll make sure that gets in the show notes as well, along with the Discord.
Nice. And so we do it like that. And then in terms of the actual practicalities of doing it, yeah, it's laser etched in sheets, and then it's painted. So that is done in a sort of, it's semi shrouded in mystery, because it took so much time. This is
so
entirely
basically getting the paint to stick the bits you've lasered.
Yeah, yeah, and it's the process is a lot like screen printing. And then it's kind of that, and a mixture of that, and polishing again.
How do the peely sticky bits fit into all this?
So that's everything's layered with masking tape as it goes on the laser, because if it's not, because everything's double sided, you'll get laser burn coming up on the bed, and it'll kind of reflect back onto the bottom of the coat, and it'll singe it. So we mask everything usually to kind of to keep it protected, and also it scratches less at that point, and it's just a little bit more looked after. Though it's very polarizing. We have some people who absolutely love it, and some people who really hate it.
An hour and a half train journey.
Yes. There's a technique. You can kind of, if you roll your thumb across the corner of it, if you can get some masking tape on your thumb, you can kind of get them all off pretty easily after that.
The other little trick I discovered is the pointier the corner, the easier it is.
Yes.
Which means you've got no hope on the Square Arkham Horror tokens.
But, oh, no.
But most of these corners have a couple of small and pointy corners that you can pick at. Mm. And I assume that one of the nice things about acrylic certainly appears to be that you don't get that effect you do on MDF when you cut things out. You get the laser burn around the edges.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really nicely clean cuts.
It's a lot more forgiving. It depends on the material. Some of them are worse than others, but it's usually...
I guess you've graduated up from diode lasers as well.
Yeah, we're using Trotec Speedy 500s. I feel like someone's going to hear that and tell me I'm wrong.
big beefy commercial grade.
Yeah. We've got two of them.
Second mortgage.
We got two, and they're lovingly referred to as Fraser and Ramon, after Fraser from Fraser from Cheers. And is it Razor Ramon, the wrestler? I'm not sure. Everything just has to rhyme.
Fraser Ramon, I love it. And so what's your throughput on those? I mean, how many tokens can you spit out in a week?
God, I'd have to do some quick back of the napkin maths about that on that. But so to give you an idea, the process, things are made in batches of quarter sheets of acrylic. So that is about 600 millimeters by 100 millimeters. And I'm going to talk in terms of Arkham Horror tokens because they're sort of the most general.
They're all nice, dinky little square tokens, and they're all the same size. And...
But I think off the top of my head, that's about 104 tokens per quarter sheet.
A quarter sheet?
Yeah. So and a quarter sheet is that 600 by 100 measurement. So you do them in batches of about 100 tokens, depending on the job. And then everything is pretty much made to order. For anything we think is kind of we're really anticipating, we tend to do a little bit of a backlog. But we just run them through that, and everything's painted in quite large stacks. So you're talking 10 to 15 stacks of quarter sheets kind of a go. And then that can keep it running. You keep that running, that will go all day. And then that will go all week, and I'm not actually certain.
I guess it's one of the amazingly cool things about these new modern manufacturing processes is that you can actually do essentially just-in-time fulfillment.
Which you
could never have done if it was some of the older ways of printing something like this. Whereas now, literally, I guess I can place an order for some more Arkham Horror tokens tomorrow, and they will literally not exist at the point I place the order. Mm.
Yeah, pretty much. It's kind of a bit of, it sounds a bit self-aggrandizing, I hope it isn't, but it's kind of a bit of a marvel, because I remember joining the company when I did, and we had this kind of quarter of a wall. I love it just as a visual marker of what we've made, because we have these little plastic bins on tool mountings on walls, and everything's labeled, and you kind of, it's easier to go and pick them that way. And it's just kind of grown to take an entire wall and a bit, kind of as I've been working there over the last kind of 3.5 years. And that's not just me that working on that, that's a few of us. And it's just crazy to think just how much stuff is in that, in terms of both the kind of art that's gone into it and then the effort that's gone into making it.
Isn't it great living in the future?
Yeah.
You'll be very much aware of this, and it's very obvious in the Battletech hobby these days that there's so much that, I mean, yes, there's, as a demo agent, I don't do 3D prints of mechs, obviously, but I have so much 3D printed scenery.
Mm.
And to the extent that we did Harrowwood Wargame Show, which is our club show, 2 weekends ago, and on the Thursday night for the Sunday show, Dan said, I think I'd like to use this map for the classic Battletech demo. And I went, all right, I can do you the hills and the trees for that by Sunday, and walked in on Sunday morning with a complete set of 3D printed hills and 3D printed tree tokens, all of which had been painted and flocked, handed to them, and says, there you go.
Yeah.
It's the future, man.
In wargaming especially, I think it's fascinating. And one of the things I remember seeing around 4 or 5 years ago was somebody on Instagram posting like, hey, I just took I chopped up some STLs, and here's my digital kit bash of this. I think it was a Turnip 28 thing at the time. And I just remember seeing it and thinking, wow, I never even thought you could do that. And now you see it everywhere. And just the amount of agency it gives people is amazing.
And you blink and you miss another step in the technology as well. Because back when I used to co-present Meeples and Miniatures, Mike Hobbs and I had a running argument about whether it will be possible to 3D print miniatures. And this was before lockdown. And yeah. I said, Moore's Law, which is if you're familiar with Moore's Law, it's the bit that says IT doubles in power every 2 years. I said, Moore's Law is going to apply to this just like it applies to everything else. And I mean, let's face it now, Dan from our club is probably not even a particularly egregious example. He has a 3D resin printer. He's currently building an army for Burrows and Badgers, and he's 3D printed all of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and
one
the
of
printer
those...
cost him low three figures.
Yeah, yeah. I remember picking up my first resin printer, which was an Anycubic Photon, which is kind of back when they first got affordable. And it's not something I've really had the time to be into since then, but what they're capable of now is crazy. Because I remember putting on a thin air shaman and it taking like 3.5 hours, and now that, you know, these things are so much faster. There's so much more fidelity. It's just so accessible.
Great. One of my friends on the Battletech Discord has a previous generation Bedslinger filament printer, and some of the big Thunderbolt Thunderhead Hextech tills take him 25 hours. They take 6 on mine.
Nice.
And that's using a 4mm nozzle. If I decide I don't care that much about the quality and use a 0.8mm nozzle instead of a 0.4, it goes down to 4 hours, which is just ridiculous. And it's just we're living in the future. But to be fair, you still, I think from your point of view, I can't produce this on my printer.
Mm,
I don't think.
Yeah.
Of course, you also have the advantage that diode lasers won't do clear, and I'm sure you can do clear if you need to.
Yeah. I think one of the things we sort of kind of rest our laurels on a little bit is that whilst kind of those options exist, we really care about the craft. And I think I'm very confident in saying that, like, we will always be that level of quality.
And I think the thing that I'm particularly taken about with it is they look so good. and so crisp and so clean. I think it's the crispness and the cleanness as much as anything.
Mm.
You know, they just look the mutts nuts, for want of a better description.
Something I think is really interesting about designing a set like Battletech is that it's, I mean, you're looking at them and I think people will hopefully see the pictures, but then it's mostly words, you know, like it's a very interesting thing to have to take quite simple terminology and make it look interesting.
You've also got the advantage that there are conventional colours for some things.
Yes, yes.
So jump is red, sprint is yellow.
Yeah, Absolutely. Making everything look different is often a challenge as well. But it's a lot of. I hope it's kind of obvious from the stuff. But I mean, I'm a bit of a maximalist about these things, and a lot of research goes into these. And it's interesting because it's a combination of things like the video games. I think HUDs are always in video games in general are always a really interesting thing to look at, because that is effectively what tokens are. They're kind of existing on a plane that is slightly divorced from the reality of whatever is happening in the game, but it has to complement it. And that's a kind of really interesting reference point at that point. How do you create something that looks like it goes with the things you're playing with, but aren't actively detracting from those things? Because we always want our mechs to be the kind of fun, shiny focal point.
Yep. Big, stumpy robots are where it's at.
Indeed.
So are you ever going to do tokens for Classic?
I would never rule it out. I think I need to fight. I need to be playing it more. I can't. I would need to have the time to research it, but I would like to.
It's
I
know interesting it's problem up. Because you don't have the. I mean, there's a certain degree of space around Alpha Strike mechs, except when you've got a mosh pit of Highlanders. But you've got to try and work out. You can't. The real issue is you can't guarantee that there's not going to be something in the next hex.
I mean, even the gaming space as a whole is much more compact.
Yeah.
I think I had people asking.
It's bad enough actually, having to move trees.
Yeah. It's something I'm definitely willing to try, but I think that's a much more kind of creative solution. In a sense, something.
There's also, of course, there's mutterings of. I think Randall was talking about he's redoing the Succession War game.
Ooh.
Yeah, yes, say that again. It might be interesting to explore deluxe tokens for that, because I suspect that the stock ones are going to be cardboard. So give me a brief. I mean, it'll be up on the show notes, but give me the brief sort of price summary for these wonderful toys that you're tempting me to buy more of.
I'm terribly sorry. I'm just going to drag up our website.
I was going to do the same. So,
so we sell. We like to sell everything individually, and give people as much choice as possible. So we have everything. We've got everything we've talked about. We've discussed both as a set and as its own thing. So if you really, really just want a rear arc token, you can't just buy a single rear arc token. We have a full what we're
which
calling
will cost
a
lance. £1.15.
Yes, exactly. we have a lance token set for BattleTech, which is the main set currently. I appreciate all you clan people. I'm sorry. I'll sort something out.
you can't really sell one and a quarter lance tokens.
No. Please don't batch on me.
If you're going to do it for clans, you probably need to add another set of heat tokens.
Yeah.
Given the complete mental approach the clan seems to have to heat.
Yes. Well, if they want to do that, they can buy a heat set.
£4.50.
Which is, there we go. and then we have we've got our set of line of sight tokens, line of sight templates. They are, I believe, everything is very precisely priced because everything beds differently on beds of acrylic. So it gets quite granular, but you have a mech line of sight template for $235, vehicle infantry for $185, proto for $175, and a super heavy for $325 because it's giant.
Buy your Ares now. I can't wait for the plastic one.
The one they sold for the WizKids game individually. I can't remember the blue one. Is it a Poseidon? Or it might be something else. I do have it somewhere, and I kind of want to dig it out.
I shall do a little bit of research. Oh, good lord, that thing's terrifying. It's Zeus.
Ah, there we go.
Oh, yes. My giddy aunt, that thing is terrifying. It's also 40 quid.
Oh, God.
If you've got one, it's 40 quid.
Oh, nice. Well, I think I bought it with, like, pocket money from Forbidden Planet. Like,
or more. There's nice. Pre-owned ones going on eBay for 60.
Very nice.
That thing's mental. Dear Lord, that thing is mental. Yeah.
I try to imagine you've,
sorry, I sidetracked you there.
No, you're all good. You're all good. Yeah, and then we've sorry. Critical hit token set. That is two of every single crit, I believe. Oh, no, sorry. No, it's not. It's better than that. It's four of fire control, movement, weapon, and two engines, and that is 1690. And then movement tokens we do as a set that is four of every single type of movement and two mobiles. That is 1750. And then we sell all of them individually for a pound each.
Yeah. And they aren't cheap. They're an awful lot, they're more expensive than doing them yourselves out of cardboard, but damn, they're pretty.
Yeah, it's the cost of doing things in the UK. But that is one thing I'll say for us. We're doing it all here, and it's all everything is above board, and everybody is nicely looked after.
Just we're really sorry if you wanted to buy some in the States because we can't legislate for tariffs.
Yes, we do. Actually, if you are trying to order from the States, we are set up to deal with that now. It does get added in checkout. We are so sorry. Hopefully, we'll get somewhere.
Not we ever.
Yeah.
But so just straying off the topic. So I was going to say, what else do you do? And then I opened the shop tab and went, oh yeah, lots.
Yeah, absolutely.
What everything. Are you particularly proud of? Apart from these, obviously.
In the wargaming scene specifically, if that's something other people are into, we just released some Trench Crusade accessories.
Oh, I know some people in my club would like those.
So obviously, you saw me at UKG. You might have seen how very, very exhausted I was.
I may have well caught you when you were having a much needed sanity break and playing with stompy robots. So
indeed,
I may have missed it.
Indeed. Like we were running a stall there, which was an amazing time. It's our second time doing it and it's great. But I was largely solely involved with a lot of the planning for the first for about 3 to 4 months before that. And so Trench Crusade specifically has been one of the first projects for quite a long time that I have been able to just sit down and draw. And that's been so nice.
They are pretty.
I think you can see it in the drawings. I had such a great time, and especially because I really like to get in the theme with it. I was looking at things like Byzantine manuscripts and World War One unit patches and all sorts of things, and it was just a really fun time.
I've just noticed the Dungeons and Dragons set. Oh, and I'm...
are those the fresh old miniatures?
The healing potion tokens.
Ah, yes. They were cool. They were really fun. We do also do this. It's not my work. It's my colleague and friend Nick's, but we do a series called Threshold Miniatures. That is a standalone series of miniature standees, and they are all his illustrations, and they're absolutely gorgeous.
They're proper, very pretty,
proper like fighting fantasy style kind of art, and I love them so much.
They are kind of neat, nice, super, fabulous. Right, so there you have it. Ed from By the Same Token, and some lovely shiny pieces of acrylic that I'm probably going to spend yet more money on. As I said, to repeat, full disclosure, Ed did send me a set of samples so I could talk about these slightly better than just looking at the pictures on the website, and I'll be giving them a run through at the club on Monday. So I guess only remains to say thank you very much, Ed.
Thank you so much for having me, and enjoy your games on Monday.
I very much will. It's been a pleasure. Cheers.
Cheers.
And there you have it. Right, time for a bunch of shout-outs for new additions to the directory, of which we've had half a dozen since I was last around. Again, if you've got clubs you want to mention that aren't in the current directory, which you'll find on talesfromtheperiphery.org.uk/directory, surprisingly enough, please let me know and we'll add you for next time. So, we have Welling Wargamers. Meet on Monday evenings at Welling URC on Church Road in Welling Garden City. We then have the Darkfire Cafe, which is in, as my good friend Rich Clark would say, Snorbans, or St Albans, in the Gavel Centre. They meet on alternate Thursdays. They have a website at darkfirecafe.com and a Discord. There is Tabletop Republic in High Wycombe on the High Street. They meet alternate Sundays from 11 till mid-late afternoon. They have a website at tabletoprepublic.com. Mostly, apparently, they seem to play Alpha Strike. Urban Arcane Games are in New Yearfield Business Park, Livingston. UrbanArcaneGames.co.uk. They have a Facebook page on which you can find their dates twice or more a month. Dumfries Gamers, shout out to Mr. J, have a website at dumfriesgamers.uk. They meet on Friday evenings at Locar Briggs Village Hall in Dumfries. And Inverurie Gaming Club meet every other Thursday at Inverurie Bowling Club. We have a lot of Scottish entries this week. And if you want to get in touch with them to start with, either talk to Ross S in #ScottishBattleTech on the UK Discord, or they have an Instagram link. Anyway, as I said, you can find all of these in the directory page on the show website. On to upcoming events. I am positive I have missed a couple, for which I apologise profusely. But currently in the sidebar on the main page, where you can find more details, there's the South Wales Battletech Open, which is October the 18th and 19th, which is a week on Saturday and Sunday, as of the date of this recording, at Firestorm Games from 9 till 6. There is an events page on Facebook, and that is £35 online or £40 in store for the weekend. The weekend after that, up here in Peterborough, there is Periphery Assault, which will be running from roughly 9 till 5.30 or thereabouts at our usual venue, which is the George Alcock Centre in Stanground. It's just off the parkway. It's not hard to get to, and if you go look on Tales from the Periphery, you will also find recommendations for hotels if you want to stay over. It'll be Alpha Strike for 300 point games. The player pack is up, and we are hoping to have a whole bunch of folks turn up. We'd like to do better than the Leeds Alpha Strike tournament, which I had great fun at, I have to say. A massive thanks to Andy for organising it. I came fourth. The sad thing is I came fourth out of four, which is a bit of a shame and doesn't reflect the work that Andy put in. So, yeah, hopefully we can do better than that, and hopefully everybody will get to more tournaments as we go along. Moving on to November. Weekend of November 15th and 16th, Warfare Wargames Show at Farnborough. There will be a Battletech participation and demo event there on both days. And for some reason, I have no note on the show notes as to who's actually running that. I think it's Stuart, but I could be wrong. Which leaves December the 6th, which is Saturday, down at Ponsers End United Reformed Church. Sam and Richard will be putting on a Battletech Alpha Strike Mass Battle reenactment of the Great Refusal. Basically, any Innosphere or any clan list from the clan invasion list permitted. Tenner a player, as usual. These are always brilliant fun. If you can make it down with a force, they are fabulous fun. I strongly recommend them. And yeah, so there you have it. And that's me done for another episode. Hopefully, it won't be so long till the next one. I think most of my large stack of horrible chaos has mostly vanished. So I have several episodes lined up, and we should get one out next week before Periphery Assault, with some interesting Alpha Strike chat with me and Bob. So until then, it just remains to say have fun and roll good dice. Tales from the Periphery is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. In short, give us some credit, don't make money out of it, and if you make an adaptation of it, you must share it under the same license. Have fun!